You're backing up the Indian on the seat. As you see, you're going a long distance back.
Are there any other buildings built before World War II that we haven't talked about, or that interest you, or anything else?
Well, see, there wasn't much in the 30s, all through the 30s. And your second war started in 39, and you were just coming out of the slump, really, at that time.
Were architects suffering quite badly?
Oh, there was very little doing. There was a period in the 30s where we carried on with the staff, and there was more money going out than there was coming in. Oh, sure. I figured when I came out of the First World War, I gave myself two peak periods in my lifetime.
Which were?
I missed the second one. The second war upset it a bit. That's all.
What was the first one?
First one was the 27, 28, 29 left, you see.
Well, I'm interested, in how your firm managed to get all these very important commissions around 27, 28.
Well, frankly, with the schools, you had to estimate your work, your building, your schools, a year ahead. You had to give that estimate to the trustees. They had to approve, they had to put a bylaw, which had to be voted on. If approved, then you had to do your work and drawings, call for your figures. And I grew up, I've been in nothing else but construction. My people were in the lumber business in Victoria. I've worked with all the machines. I've built boats. The last boat another chap myself built was a 36-foot cabin cruiser.
Well, when did you build boats? When were you building boats?
When I was a young fellow, 16, 17. And my education with my father was, he'd ask me what I thought the cost of certain things would be. I would give him my estimate, then he'd give me his and tell me why. So I've been raised, as I say, I've worked out in construction. I got the building in Victoria, the railroads. And Mr. Murphy was the Deputy Minister of Public Works. He asked me to come down and see him as fast as I could, wanted me to handle the work. Well, he went out to see what kind of a pencil pusher I was. I realized what he was trying to do. I talked to him and spoke to him in the construction language of a man who had been on construction. He finally said to me, "You're talking the language of a construction man. Have you worked in construction?" I said, "Yes, I'm an architect. In my opinion, an architect should know. I don't think he should just be a paper man." Well, I got my training, so I know a little bit still. No, that's the whole secret.
Well, back to what I asked you before, I'm very interested in the fact that you did so much work in concrete. In, say, when you were training, did Thomas Hooper do any work in concrete?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think he did. You see, most of the buildings were timber. Mm-hmm. Timber was cheap.
Yeah.
See? What the hell?
The hall building, another building which interests me very much.
Well, those plans were done in Winnipeg by Northwood and Shivers.
Northwood and Shivers. The contractor, we were associate architects on it.
Who were the
Carter Hall Ollinger was the general contractor.
Well, we gave Mr. Hall a letter that this property would not carry a 10-story building and would only support two stories, and three would be the outside. And he should buy an additional inside property to get a bigger building. Now let me tell you why. This could be a much bigger building with more rental space, and you'd have no more corridor, no more elevator shafts, no more stairs, no more toilets. Now, the problem boils down to rental area against non-rental area. And that's when you come to these big high buildings where they're putting one elevator cab above the other. So when they stop at two floors at one time because they can't afford to lose so much space in elevator shafts. No, no, it's all dollars and cents.
Who was Mr. Hall who commissioned the whole building?
E. Hall, he was a grain man from Winnipeg. Carl Hall and Frank Hall are local. His sons are living here now, been here for years. They were carried on as brokers. He'd been a grain broker, I think, and a very fine chap, E. Hall.
The two brothers still.
Yeah, they're members.
Yeah.
Carl and Frank.
Yeah. Well, actually, one more question. I mean, I'm being a bit of a nag about this. But, I mean, one has a building that's has, in the Hall building, virtually no ornament from the bottom to the top, but up at the top there's a kind of crusting in terracotta. Now, is that done as a... let me ask why it's done the way it is.
This is all in Manitoba stone.
Yeah, Tindle stone.
Tindle stone. Tindle stone has hard sections that have no absorption in it. The softer has greater absorption than the Haddington stone. It's all a case of materials, and all the weather is breaking everything down. Like your plate glass. You may think plate glass remains plate glass and is clear and everything. After plate glass has been in the show window for a period of time, it's all yellow. You ever realize it's a deep yellow, the longer it's a deeper the yellow. You put the cast clear glass and you see the difference.
All right, here's a picture federal building that we're talking about.
Oh, well, that's sort of related, you see, mm-hmm. with the arches there and with the pilasters here to take the place of this.
Mm-hmm. Could this have been done without pilasters?
Well, sure you could.
Federal government have approved, or might they have?
Oh, sure, they were very liberal, as long as you weren't doing anything foolish.
Would the federal government at any time have suggested you put a steep roof on that building? Because a number of public buildings in Ottawa during the 30s deliberately went up with steep roofs, like the Hotel Vancouver, well, of course, which is private, or this building.
Well, you see, the first idea Sir Henry Thornton had for this new Vancouver hotel was to be all Spanish. Mm-hmm. We took this position that the American tourist was fed up with Spanish coming from California, and that we should have the only architecture we could lay up, and it came for, which was French chateau type from Montreal and Chateau McDonald and Chateau Laurier. So they agreed, and that was what you had. And of course, then the other point was that roof, you were on a lower site where it is now, is against the old Vancouver Hotel, and the roof, pitch roof going up, gave you a better chance to look at as high a building as the CPR Hotel.
Who was Sir Henry Thornton?
Hmm?
Who was Sir Henry Thornton?
He was the president of the Canadian National Railway. He was an American who had been brought over to England on one of the railways, organizing the railways there, and then he came back to head up the Canadian National when they went up to make the government railway.
You were asking about industrial buildings the other day. This is rather unique. The gasometer.
The gasometer.
It was designed by this firm.
Can you tell
it's
me?
It's gone now.
It's just in existence.
Where was it and what did it do?
It was right next to the Georgia Viaduct
over near Main Street.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Is it gas storage?
Yes. And it's the, you know, these old gasometers, they I think it's this last two pictures show it. Where this is when it's full, all these sections slide one inside the other.
It stands up like that, Bill, all the time.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, it stands up like that. There's a diaphragm inside that floats on the top of the gas. And by the weight you put on the diaphragm, that gives you your gas pressure. And then you pump up a tar that runs around the edge and makes the seal between the floating diaphragm and the wall of the gasometer.
Oh. Oh, I see.
And what you're up against there was the wind turning by rolling it over.
What material is it?
That's our metal. But then the foundation was concrete, and the holding down bolts had to be, I think, was 2.5 inches in diameter.
Well, these are the progress photographs.
Excuse me, just information on those old, the old, our old books. Did you favor any particular construction company?
No. No.
Were there some whom you respected more and did better jobs?
Well, we've always said we want the contractor to make a profit. Mm-hmm. And the best contractor gives you the best value, the man who's competent. And he's the man who can make his profit.
Who were the leading builders in the 20s and 30s?
Northern Construction, Carter Hall Ballinger,
yeah. Smith Brothers and Wilson, the Pacific Engineering, which I think was called Foster.
Dominion Construction.
Did many non-Vancouver construction companies come here to do larger buildings?
Not in that period.
It wasn't until after the war that
the contractors out here on the coast were really as competent as any in Canada. Mm-hmm. And most of these firms went right through as far as Winnipeg. Some of them went right down into Toronto.
I wonder whether I could, actually going backwards again, ask you sort of opinions on a few rather older architects, men who were practicing when you broke in or already had practice. Well, we mentioned Parr and Fee before.
Yeah, well, you're way, way back, you see, with Parr and Fee, and I think perhaps I wouldn't discuss them. There was a time when everything was too loose, pretty loose, and if an architect wanted to do something shady, why, there was nothing that prevented them. Same as the engineer or anyone else been there. But we had good firms. There was Mercer, Gardner and Mercer, and that was Gardner and Thornton. And you had Sharp and Thompson. You had Peabody. You had George. That's the old South fella. Bob Watson was there.
Work with them.
May I pull a skeleton out of the closet? I mean, Parr and Fee have long been dead. This firm ceased to practice.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, could I ask you why you'd rather not talk about them?
Well, frankly, I wouldn't want to say this thing, you see, but I won't mention any firm, but there was one firm who were reputed to have taken checks from people, get them certified. They never cashed them, and then when business hit the slump, they cashed their money and went back to the United States.
I mean, leading business practice aside, just from the point of view of design, like Parr and Fee, and later their successors, Parr, McKenzie, and Day, did the Vancouver block. Was that an admired building?
Well, McKenzie and Day, of course, were a different firm.
Well, Thomas Fee, he retired in 1911 or 1912 from active practice.
Chrysler were a good firm. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of school work, a lot of schools up in Shaughnessy.
And the churches, too, didn't they?
Hmm?
They did churches, too.
Yeah, sure.
What about Somerville and Putnam?
Somerville and Putnam were good in a lot of the banks. In all the banks, they were an American firm, you see.
Mm-hmm. Was Putnam from Vancouver or Seattle? I know Somerville was from Seattle.
Both were Americans.
Both Americans. Now, I mean, the reason I'm asking is I'm very interested in different kinds of clients and the different kinds of architects they might have turned to. I mean, I think of Somerville and Putnam having work as in a sense, very much more, what, sophisticated than Parr and Fee.
Well,
what different kinds of clients have gone to one versus the other?
Well, you see, you got some in Putnam. You have their banks. The Merchants Bank is still sitting where you can see it, and some of their other banks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Parr and Fee weren't in the same class at all.
Would they have wanted a bank job if they had gotten it?
Well, it's up to the bank, I wouldn't say.
Well, what kinds of people use Parr and Fee? What kinds of people went to Parr and Fee? Who were their clients?
Well, I wouldn't tell you, really. You're a long way back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the first time I've ever heard the name.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I just wondered what they raised with you.
Well, I think of them as being...
What building have you got in mind that they did?
Well, the Vancouver Block, the Europe Hotel.
Yeah.
A number of smaller commercial buildings on Hastings Street, Cordova Street. There was, well, I mean, some of these go back quite a bit farther. The one that I like is the Ralph Block on Hastings, built in 1899, which I believe is cast iron front.
There's a Granville Mansion, so I don't know who did that. Somebody like to run that, but a lot of the old buildings.
Mm-hmm. What about, would you have remembered
See,
what?
I wouldn't know. I couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. It was Huntington and Curtis, too. I was saying, perhaps they did the Rogers building.
No, Rogers building is another Seattle firm. I forget.
Garrow did the Georgia Hotel. But some of these chaps way back, I don't know.
Would you have remembered Whiteway, who did the World Building?
I remember the Whiteway's name, yes. And there was, I'm trying to think of that. Joe Bowman.
Yeah.
Now, well, another one, well, the Dominion Building, which was done by Hellyer, whose son later joined your firm.
Yeah, Paul Hellyer's in the hospital with a stroke, and then what, about 5 years, I guess.
Well, now, I mean,
his father was an artist. Morris was an engineer with us.
But there are a number of these much larger early buildings, like the World Building, the Dominion Building, and such. I mean, did the architects of your generation, I mean, what were your feelings towards them? Were they old-fashioned?
There was another Dominion Building was built on Pender Street. Pender and Hamilton. And there.
Right, well, the Dominion Trust moved there in 1913.
That's right. They moved there sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they went built.
Yeah.
That was a like 10-story concrete building.
I mean, would you have had any sense of these being old-fashioned buildings that we had to do better than? I mean, I'm thinking now, put yourself in 1925 and looking back at these buildings that went up 1910 to 1913. Were you conscious of their being very old? Or
no, I don't think so. See, the biggest change, as I see it, was that too often, the old buildings were designed for the exterior. When we tried to function, was that we lived on the plan, and the plan was the most functional part of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The earning power lay in the plan. And then, of course, if you have a good plan, you automatically develop a good elevation.
Mm-hmm.
One follows, you don't. To me, like some of the old houses in Victoria, Sam McClure, some of his houses were beautiful. People loved them, others were just nondescript. Well, he did a house last year because he was a watercolor painter. He did a house from the exterior, and the plan followed, that's about it.
Well, now, is that all right for a house, or is that still wrong? I mean, I asked you before about houses being the same as or different from our office buildings. Can we justify somebody designing a house as a painter?
Well, he had to, of course. He had to make a living. I mean, a very lovely chap, English chap, Sam McClure. He did some lovely watercolors. And as I say, some of his houses were beautiful. They're still in Victoria. But I remember Harrington Park. He paneled the dining room in the big house, and he had the corners, and these members were all small. Well, the corners hasn't got the light on, and with the small members he put in, it was a flat looking piece of stuff. Could be a piece of flat plank, you wouldn't know the difference. And that's where you really have to have the training of knowing how to get the scale of your moldings, and the same with your buildings. You take some of the Russian work, in my opinion, is beautiful. It's as crude as it's possible to make it, but it's got strength, it's strong, and it registers.
Well, Mr. McCarter, Alice used to tell me that if I was doing anything on the exterior of a building, and he'd look at it, and he'd say, you've got to make that much bolder, because it's not going to read. He said, you're designing this as though you're going to be seeing it from 6 feet away, and you're going to be looking at it from 100 feet away or more.
Okay.
But you had to be bold in your concept, and I guess that is epitomized in this building here, that the ornamentation is bold. It stands out from the middle of the harbor, you can see it.
What about Vancouver City Hall? Would that town name Matheson City Hall?
Well, it would for him.
Would you call that a bold building in this sense?
I would think it's trash, yeah, it's strong. It's simple and straightforward. I look at it as a building.
But it doesn't, Mr. McCarter, at the risk of getting into a struggle with Talley and Matheson, that building does not follow your principles of making the most out of space, because it is a building of very wasteful
space, yeah.
In space. And as a consequence, never functioned too well.
No, well, actually, we've been bottled up before the Second War.
See?
No, I'm sorry.
Well, that's what they're driving at today. You got a burning power, and I don't know about these new buildings. I would say that's the basis of which, because you take the Burks building. Well, the Burks building has a little narrow court in the center. You see, you could have a fifth less investment in the Burks building and have a better return. And I think that is the whole.
Of the older buildings, which, other than the ones your own firm did, which do you like best?
Well, I don't know. Where'd you go?
Well,
that's... I don't. See, the different buildings, you take like the telephone building. Well, it was designed, the first part of it was designed as a bomb-proof building. And designed as a bomb-proof building so it could be incorporated later into the building that's there now.
Okay, now, well, let's jump ahead to more recent work by the firm. How long did you remain active with the firm?
Well, I've been out of it for 12 years. I retired in 70, so that's 12 years.
Mm-hmm. What about the building?
Well, 17 years ago.
See, I was thinking it was more.
Yeah, 17 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, what about the works in, say, in the 40s and the 50s? Do they go in any new directions? I mean, what would you have said the main achievement of McCarter and Aaron was at that time?
Well, I don't know. See, the Bank of Commerce is the Bank of Commerce, is the Dominion Bank, now it's our Dominion Bank. And we try to get the Bank of Commerce to remove the old building that's the Coronations in Granville. And we want to present the Hastings Street frontage to the city and mount it at the Lost Lagoon as a reflective monument, you see? And then we suggested they would buy all the property over to the No Bank of Nova Scotia on Hastings Street and put up a 25 or 30 story building.
When was this?
Well, before we did the alterations that we did in there, they said no. They thought they had to keep the old building. Well, I don't know whether we class the old building as a monument, but when the financial district is established in the city, it remains fixed. Your financial district in London, New York, these other places, remains fixed in the financial district. We considered was from Granville to Burrard, Hastings, Pender in here. And that's why the Bank of Canada sold the corner of Dunsmore and Howe and came down to Hastings Street. Now they say they're going to have the financial district up to the corner of Georgia and Burrard. Royal Bank, well, I don't know. To me, financial districts, as a rule, are being fixed. Retail districts, as a rule, move on an average. This, I was speaking way back, you can check me, Bill. Retail districts move on the average of about a block every 5 years. New York's retail district moved about a mile and a quarter in 15 years.
Well, actually, Montreal's financial districts moved from...
Well, I haven't checked. Yeah. It was downtown.
It was around Place d'Armes, St. James, and now it's up in Dorchester.
Well, that's what they tried to say, but I question whether all the banks are up there.
Uh-huh.
See, your banks and your financial house and your brokers are all pretty close together. Because, you see, your banks are loaning money to your brokers on the basis of the securities they're depositing. That jump from New York, I think, really some want to make a sacrifice for 15 years, mile and a quarter. See, it's moving here now. I don't know. See, Chris Spencer figured that the retail district would remain fixed in Vancouver for 30 years. And if it was, he should have his money out of his building before that. Well, of course, he ran into the Depression in the 30s and the war. But
before those buildings, though, I mentioned at Carter, there was the wartime housing.
Well, that was the 23 million for wartime housing.
did your firm work on wartime housing?
Well, we did them all over British Columbia.
The firm had the responsibility for all the wartime housing contracts through all of British Columbia. And this was unique. There was no other architectural firm in the country that were given as much responsibility as McCarty and Nairn. That's correct, isn't it, sir?
Absolutely. They were responsible for the president.
Mm-hmm. Well, now in wartime housing, what kinds of criteria does one use? How's that different from...
Well, this housing was called temporary housing.
That was the name of the company, instead. It used to be wartime
company.
Housing, so wartime housing. And then it became, was it Wartime Housing Corporation, Wartime Housing Company? Then it became Central Motion Housing.
There were three branches of housing the government had, and they brought them all together into Central Motion Housing. But this housing was for the shipyard workers, for all the other personnel that had to enter wartime work of some kind. We did housing, well, North Vancouver, Prince Rupert, Kelowna, Prince George.
Are any of them still?
Penticton.
Oh, yeah.
Are they still around today?
Oh, yeah.
Kimberley.
North Shore and around the airport.
Oh, I was
Sea
Island.
On the old route to the old airport terminal, all those houses that you see there, the streets of them were done at that time. And you can find them all through the province.
Were they done similarly, the same basic design around the province?
Well, they were. The material in the houses was the same as you'd have in any $40,000-$50,000 house. Only they were on concrete pad stones. There were no permanent foundations on them. That's why they were called temporary. But then the government sold them afterwards, and all the people had to do was put foundations on them and jack them up and have a basement and do what they wish. Now, the houses, on the whole, cost the government, we bought the house for about $2,000 a piece.
Are these the houses that have a door from the kitchen to the living room?
Yeah.
One of the students was asking why that door was there, because a number have been shut up in eastern Vancouver.
Well, see, you can imagine when we got these houses down to such a price. We had living rooms that were about 12 by 18. There were two bedrooms and a bath, a kitchen.
And there's a group of houses in East Vancouver that some architecture students were looking at, and they found there were two doors out of the kitchen, and only one was used today. And that it seems that 9 out of 10 owners had shut up the second door out of the kitchen.
Well, there was only one door from the kitchen to the living room.
That is, kitchen to the bedroom, possibly?
Well, there was a little hall, and after the little hall opened the bath and the two bedrooms. Mm-hmm. And the little hall was just... Mm-hmm. Yes, there were different plans. There were certain different plans.
But also, during the war, didn't McCarter and Nairn design a plant for a Dominion Bridge manufacture Beaufort's guns?
Oh, sure, we did that big plant out there.
Yeah. That was another industrial plant that I was trying to remember.
That's still there, too. Where was it?
Yes, it's still there, yeah.
Sure. Where is it?
Dominion Bridge Grandview Highway and Boundary Road, yeah.
Oh, we did a lot of industrial work. Did the British ropes.
Yeah.
Did the other wire rope plant.
Yeah, Wright's wire ropes.
Wright's wire ropes.
That was
close. We got industrial plants all over.
What about let's come up to present times and the recent spate of high-rise buildings, the new bank towers and office towers that are going up left and right in Vancouver. Should this have happened? I mean, why is this happening in late 1960s? Is this something that could have happened in the 1920s just as easily? Yeah.
Well,
would you have liked to have seen Vancouver go in this direction 40 years ago?
Well, of course, your development comes from people. And there's a demand for space and people make the demand. So I can't see this boom volume being required, say, 30 years back, because there was no demand for it. Like, I believe in keeping as close as we can to supply and demand. I can't sort of agree with a minimum wage that's going up and up, where certain people gain, and the higher it goes, the fewer the people will gain. And I can't see business taking young people in to train them and paying them for the privilege of training them. I wasn't raised that way. I mean, I think my day, I was told I had to work and take pleasure out of work.
Thinking about where there was a demand for development, okay, the Marine Building. Now, when Stimson decided on the Marine Building, was it done mainly as a speculative venture, or had they secured their tenants in advance?
No. Stimson, they were overseas people out of Toronto. They believed that Canada would grow, and if they developed office space in some of the leading Canadian cities, they would win over the period of years. But they set out to finance it with the public, and their securities were not a first lien on the building. They were a first lien on a company who had an interest in the building. So it wasn't a security brokers handled it. They had to sell it individually. Mm-hmm. Now, when it broke, and they had to go into New York to find people who would put money into it to finish the building, because otherwise it would have been unfinished. right. The people who had the original money in lost their money because they did the security, their paper, bonds, or preferred shares were not a direct lien on the building. Well, that was the sad part.
Yeah.
But they didn't endeavor to do something overnight. It was shoddy. They were believing that they put the building up in Toronto.
What did they do in Toronto?
Hmm?
Which did they do in Toronto?
What's down there, it was a garage, and the front part of it was an office building.
Mm.
And you could drive up in the garage and then go through a door, and you'd be on your office floor.
Mm. You said they were an English company?
No, they were Toronto. Canadian. They were Canadian. Johnson was the head man, Major Johnson. Joe Hobbs was the man that was here.
Mm-hmm. The
Joe Hobbs put everything he had into the building, left Vancouver broke, went back to the old country, and made a fortune again. Was made of a freeman of the City of London.
Why did the City of Vancouver not buy the Marine Building when Stimson?
Well, we had an option on for $900,000. We planned it with the auditor was up there at City Hall. And the City Hall would have used the Merchants Exchange as a council chamber and half the space in the building, the other half could be rented. But if you tried to sell Vancouver at that period in the Depression of gold brick at half price, they'd have people would have turned it down. So we decided to put up $50,000 and gamble where you could put the bylaws that were not. It just couldn't be done, no matter how much you spent to try and.
I've seen the drawings that were done at that time, converting the Marine. We still have them, converting the Marine Building into the City Hall.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm running out of questions. Let me just ask a bit. what more you might want to talk about, or whether that's enough?
Well, I don't know, you're not coming up to the date, but that's the building I was in. I was the post office, of course.
The post office,
which is really a factory building.
Mm-hmm.
You can't jiggle this wall because you have conveyor belts running inside and equipment and that. And there's the most modern parcel sorting machine in there anywhere in the world. That one there and one in Winnipeg.
I understand it has the largest welded steel frame in the world, or some such.
It was when it was built.
Why welded frame, as opposed
well,
to?
Well, that's more or less what's been adopted modernly. See, once upon a time, it was all rivets.
Mm-hmm.
They can be high tensile bolts or riveting, like when they weld a ship.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand, they weld the ship in the last section, they weld is the midsection. And then they do the whole thing from both sides all at once. Because you get shrinkage.
Well, it saved an immense poundage in steel by using the welded joints, the rigid type of joint. Another reason, of course, for using welded methods in downtown areas is the lack of noise. Very quiet type of construction, comparatively speaking. But basically, that was done to save steel, and it did.
It was the design, again, entirely your firm's, or did the Public Works Department make any stipulations?
We did the whole thing. From the Public Works didn't bother with all they do is review it.
Yeah.
But interesting thing, going back to David Spencer's department store, the steel columns were fabricated in Montreal because there was no plant big enough here to fabricate them. They were so heavy. And so the beams came in from the old country, England, Scotland, and were fabricated here. And the rivet holes made in Montreal lined up with the rivet holes made in Vancouver.
And if they had.
That's a good bit. And again, the plate glass came from Great Britain, And packing cases were opened in front of the windows, glass put into place. There were never cut or touched in this country. Everything made.
Well, at the Marine building, it might be interesting that on the bronze work, Mr. McCarter, and getting, which started a business in Vancouver.
That's right.
As this was Fred Schilling, who
came
up from the States to do those doors. And I guess the doors were done.
Father and three sons, and yep. This son decided to come be a Canadian. And the bronze doors, with the intricate detail, are a quarter of an inch thick. And all the, and they went on and made all the bronze work then for all the other places.
Do you know who did the bronze doors on the old Royal Bank building? About the same time?
Well, it could have been them. I wouldn't want to say them.
No.
They were just removed and shipped off to Park Royal Shopping Center.
Were they really?
Shipped to what?
They were sent to Park Royal Shopping Center. They were on a branch bank there. They took them off the main bank about 2 years ago.
Really?
Davenport. This is the main Royal Bank. Davenport was the architect on it.
Yeah. Did he come out to Vancouver to supervise, or was there a local firm who
I don't know. We couldn't say. Mm-hmm. I do know that when he found we were putting five elevators in the Marine building, he had to get busy and put another elevator in the Royal Bank.
Would you have called that building old-fashioned or traditional as opposed to the Marine building?
I don't know, sister.
Well,
you know, I would say that it's more traditional in its shape,
more traditional
and form. This building, in fact, you know, stacks up pretty well with contemporary type of structures in the planning design theory. But I would think that that one was more of a throwback, and it was built after this one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In a sort of wedding cake type of design.
Mr. Leithead was telling me last time about the problems of the corridor office plan versus the central core office plan. Now, the zoning requirements insisted that you have two staircases, right?
So much area.
Yeah.
See? They got to be so far apart.
Did they have, they had to be linked by a corridor, through a public corridor?
Well, I don't know how they have it now. There was some talk that they were. See, you have to compete here with your office building design and developing and churning power with what they're doing in the States. And if they're doing something that gives them a bigger rental area by reason of a stair being able to enter it through another office, as long as you have a glass door to go through, well, then you've developed more rental area because you've reduced the amount of card. Well, I'm not up to date on the present bylaws of what they're doing, what they're asking now. But then, you should only use the bylaw as a broad guide. Mm-hmm. Over and above that, as I say, is your problem with the investment.
Now, would you say that, I mean, since you've left the firm, I don't know whether I should ask this with you here. I mean, would you say that McCarter & Aaron has gone in the same general direction and represents the same kind of values it did?
Well, I mean, as far as I know, they have, because if they weren't delivering the goods, they certainly wouldn't get to work. Mm-hmm. See, I could tell you some interesting stories. I'm thinking.
You'd like me to leave?
I'd like you to stay.
I'm thinking, you see, this idea, Eastern Canada, I think all the brains are down there. I think all the brains are in the United States. We're way out here. Now, this is a little story dealing with David Spencer's building. And the agreement that I got with Mr. Spencer was that we would do the building, but we'd have to submit our drawings to a department store expert in Chicago. So I agreed. I wasn't worrying. I agreed. So anyhow, I get word to meet Mr. Spencer in Chicago. I get in at noon of the day before the meeting, which was 9 o'clock the following day. I go to this office, this department store expert, doing department stores in Sydney, Australia, all over the United States. And his leading man said, no, I cannot show you our stuff. Until my boss comes in tomorrow. Well, I said, I'm ready to show you mine. You show me yours, and we'll have our criticism ready for tomorrow morning, save time. So I talked to him because I was interested in the problem. We met the following morning at 9 o'clock. He had three sets of plans he was submitting and laying down. I had one set that we had developed as our solution. I didn't think much of these three sets. After an hour or more, there was a point he was trying to get over to Mr. Spencer, and I said, I think we can show it to Mr. Spencer on our drawings, and I laid them down. He said, I have a fourth set of drawings that I'm preparing that won't be ready till this afternoon. So when we met after lunch, around 4 o'clock, he produces a set of drawings that's a duplicate of mine's across the. So I realize I have talked too much of being an enthusiast. So I never said a word, because we'd spent the time after our set went on the table trying to break them down. And his was just. Well, that night, in the oldest cell, rooms were scarce in Chicago. I got a big double room, and I said, Mr. Spencer, you can come in.